It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we fire up the grill and try our hand at grilling brilliant burgers.
But first, tomorrow is National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. If you have outdated and unused prescription medications in your medicine chest, this is an opportunity to get rid of them safely.
Prescription drugs are linked to an increase in drug abuse and environmental concerns like contaminated drinking water, so health officials are urging people to dispose of them properly.
With us now, we have Dana Bruick. She's spokesperson for the Wisconsin Department of Justice, which is coordinating statewide efforts around the day. We also have Mark Lovicott from the UW Police Department, which held a take-back drive this morning on the UW campus. Dana, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. This is an important issue. We appreciate you getting the word out.
Yeah, and Mark, thanks to you as well.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Dana, let's start with you. How does National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day work?
Well, this is something that the Wisconsin Department of Justice has promoted for a number of years. The DEA Heads Up organizes this take-back. It's held twice a year, each year in the spring and in the fall, and it's really an opportunity for people who may have medications just sitting in their household medicine cabinets to dispose of them properly and search online for a collection site near them by their zip code. We know that prescription drug abuse is the nation's fastest growing drug problem. We also know that heroin abuse is likely driven, at least in a big way, at least in part, by these addictive opiate-based medications that, if they're left sitting in household medicine cabinets, they're at risk of being diverted, being stolen for misuse, and thereby abused.
So the Department of Justice, the DEA, are hoping with these events we get these opioids in particular out of medicine cabinets, reduce that temptation.
That's right, and Wisconsin historically has done very well at these take-back days. We have been in the top five in the volume of drugs collected, and that's incredibly impressive when you consider we're right up there with California, Texas, and New York. So we hope to keep the trend going, and we appreciate you folks helping us get the word out about how important this is.
Mark, the UW Police Department, as we mentioned, held a take-back event. It just ended. How did it go?
You know, and Dana alluded to this as well. We had a record-breaking day. We had a beautiful weather and a lot of walk-ups today, and that's what we were hoping for this event. You know, we hold our event a day earlier typically because we want to take advantage of those folks who may be downtown for work or for whatever reason and may not be able to get downtown because of something going on the weekend. We also have Crazy Legs happening tomorrow in the Madison area, so we decided to move it up a day, and we usually see huge success, and we did. Last year, we collected almost 90 pounds of medications, over-the-counter drugs and prescription medications. We just wrapped up, and we just weighed everything, and we collected 182 pounds this
wow.
year. And when you think about it, those little tiny pills, in which most of these are, that's a lot of drugs. And that's a lot of drugs who are out of the hands now, which are out of the hands rather now, of potential people who shouldn't have them. So we're really excited and happy about how well our event went this year.
This is a question I've been asking myself for years. What do I do with these medications? Mm-hmm. Is that the response you get from people saying, thank you, I had no idea what to do with these things?
Most people don't know. And, you know, in years past, people were taught, you know, just flush them down the drain or flush them down the toilet. And there's obviously a lot of environmental concerns about that. And this is a great way for individuals to collect whatever they've been holding on to for whatever reason. And we'll take them. We'll get them to the proper people who can dispose of them properly. And, you know, we ran into a woman today who clearly has been holding on to her medication for a long time. One of her medications expired back in 1963. So these are individuals who have had them
wow.
quite a long time in their medicine cabinet, and we're glad they finally got them to us.
Dana, people might be listening now thinking, hey, I want to do this. How do they find out where to take the medications in the next day or two?
Well, I would recommend that they visit the Wisconsin Department of Justice website, which is, of course, www.doj.state.wi.us, and there's a prescription drug take-back button, I like to call it, right on our homepage in the center of the page. You can't miss it. You click on that, and we have a short description of the event tomorrow and a link to the DEA website, which allows you to search by zip code or by, you know, your community, and it'll pull up law enforcement agencies that are serving as collection sites, and we have more than 200 collection sites tomorrow in Wisconsin. So in all likelihood, you'll be able to find somewhere that's near you. And if not, then you could still call your law enforcement agency and say, I have these, you know, what can I do with them? And they will likely give you some good advice. But I'd also like to point out that folks may think, well, I do have some, you know, unused prescription meds, but, you know, I can't see anyone coming in and taking them or, you know, whatever the case may be. But I just want to share one stat which says that more than 3 out of 4 people who misuse prescription painkillers use drugs prescribed to others who may be unaware that their drugs are missing. We see that, you know, parents may have, you know, have had a surgery or a procedure or, you know, needed pain relief, and they'll have prescription drugs sitting in their household medicine cabinets, and they may be unaware that, you know, a relative, a friend of their child or their child, has taken those prescription drugs. They may not be even aware that they've gone missing.
And Dana, people might be thinking, I've got prescription drugs that I'm not technically supposed to have. Maybe they're from an old roommate or something like this. Is this a no questions asked sort of scenario?
It's free. It's anonymous. You bring them, no questions asked, and the law enforcement agency will take them. Over-the-counter meds, prescription drugs. Yep.
And Mark, maybe people miss this event. They've got these drugs in their house next week, the rest of the year. Yep. Is there a way, if they miss the event, to still get rid of them?
There is. We have a great partnership with Safe Communities of Madison-Dane County, and they helped us obtain a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week med drop box, which is actually located in our lobby. So any time of day, if somebody wants to come over to the University of Wisconsin-Madison Police Department, they can do so, drop their medications in the box, and we'll get rid of it properly. Folks can head to our website, which is uwpd.wisc.edu, and we've got a link right on the front there about this drug take-back day, but there's also a link within there that they can search for 24/7 med drop boxes around their area, because they're all over the place. They're starting to pop up more and more because law enforcement agencies are realizing that, you know, this is a valuable tool to help keep these drugs out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. So let's have this tool available to folks where they can drop it off all the time. We've seen huge, huge numbers of people coming into our lobby to drop these off, and we encourage people to do so if they missed it this weekend.
And the hope, if people get these drugs out of the system there, they won't start taking them and ultimately end up on heroin. Thank you both so much for telling us about this program. Dana, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Mark, thanks to you for joining us as well.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
We've heard from Dana Bruick from the Wisconsin Department of Justice, Mark Lovicott from the UW Police Department. For more info on National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, as Dana mentioned, you can find a drop-off site at the Department of Justice website. We've got a link to that on the Central Time Facebook page. You can check it out there.
Up next, grilling the perfect burger for Food Friday after we check in with Michael Leland for a look at headlines. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The weather is slowly but surely starting to get nicer around the state, which has a lot of people itching to get out there and start grilling.
And so we thought now might be the perfect time to talk about grilling for Food Friday. Jamie Proviance is with us. He's the author of several cookbooks, including his latest Weber's Big Book of Burgers. Jamie, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thank you. Great to be here.
Well, in Wisconsin here, we're just at that point in the season where we're itching to get grilling. Maybe we're jumping the season a little, but everyone I know is just dying to get grilling. It's been a really long winter. So what do we need to do before we start using them for the first time after months?
Yeah, you got to pull the grill out, take the cover off, and clean it up a little bit. You know, brush that grate really well. It helps to do that when the grill is super hot. And then if you're using a gas grill, you know, it's a good idea to check all the connections, make sure you don't have any leaks. What you do is you turn on the gas, you put a little bit of soapy water wherever the connections are. If you see bubbles, then that's an indication you got a leak, so you need to take care of that. But otherwise, it's surprisingly easy, you know, just a little cleanup and you're good to go.
So the grill's up, we are ready to rock, and a lot of people go straight to the burgers. Let's start with the basics, beef. What's the best kind of beef to buy when we're making that burger?
Well, I like chuck, and I like particularly a loose ground chuck. I think it has a great beefy, you know, meaty kind of flavor. Sirloin is good, you know, brisket is good. What you want to avoid is what's called hamburger at the store, okay? Because that really is just a mishmash of leftover stuff that doesn't really have necessarily the depth of flavor. You're getting scraps.
So if I want to make a hamburger, the one thing I should absolutely not buy is the meat called hamburger.
Exactly. It should at least be called ground beef, because by law that can't include any fat scraps or other questionable material. And if you can get something that's pure chuck, preferably with a good amount of fat in it, you know, an 80-20 blend is nice. That means it's got about 20% fat. That's really important for the flavor and the juiciness of the burger.
So I haven't eaten beef in years, but I have to say I was just looking at your cookbook and the beef section going, maybe I want a burger. They look really good. Can you tell us about, for instance, the smoked Gouda barbecue burger?
Oh, gosh. All my favorite things, you know, beef and smoke and cheese. That's just the way my mind wanders sometimes. You put those things together and, you know, you're happy, I guess, even if you're a vegetarian. But you notice I do have quite a few vegetarian burgers recipes in the book and a lot of other surprises as well. There are fish burgers and chicken burgers and, you know, lamb burgers and... burgers are really not what they used to be, even 5 or 10 years ago. They've gotten much more interesting in their variety, and I think better in quality. You know, burgers have kind of gone gourmet lately.
I want to get more into veggie burgers in a bit, but as a stopping point, I like to cook with ground turkey. I got to say, when I do a burger with really lean ground turkey, it's a really boring burger. What can I do to rescue it?
Well, that's a good question. There are a few things to keep in mind. First of all, you're going to have to add something to the ground turkey to give it some juiciness, you know, some moisture. It doesn't have to be unhealthy. It could be, for instance, very finely chopped or grated vegetables. Onions or shallots or garlic work really well because they have these natural vegetable juices that make the burger moist and also, you know, delicious. You can also use condiments like, you know, Worcestershire sauce or soy sauce or something like that. You could use a little bit of egg in there. That helps and bind it maybe with a bit of breadcrumb. And then you just have to be really careful in the cooking of the burger. You want to make sure that you don't push out whatever juice is in there because there isn't a whole lot in there. So whereas a beef burger might be done over a high temperature, turkey burgers tend to be done over a more moderate, you know, medium temperature. And another thing is don't make them too thick because then they take too long to cook and all that time on the grill has a tendency to dry them out. So get them down to about 3/4 of an inch thick, medium heat, provide a lot of moisture up front, and they should be great.
So I've basically made my turkey burgers exactly the wrong way. I think I just hit every no-no that you listed for us.
Well, hey, that's you live and learn, right? Now you're set for the season.
And what about ground beef? Does everything you just told Rob to rescue his turkey burgers, does that hold true if you're cooking with ground beef?
Well, generally, yes. But you've got just a lot more margin to work with ground beef. So I do like to make them about 3/4 of an inch thick so they're not on the grill too long, although I do crank up the heat a little bit more for a beef burger because I want to get that char on the outside. I think that's part of a truly great burger, you know, where you have this contrast between that charred, you know, brown, almost crust on the outside and then the really soft, juicy meat inside. But you can also add all kinds of flavorings to the ground beef, not necessarily for juiciness because you've already got that in most cases, but just for extra flavor to make it more interesting. I think a plain beef burger can border on dull unless you've got some stuff in there. So why not add, you know, fresh herbs, a little bit of mustard, you know, maybe some smoked sea salt, you know, some sort of interesting ground spices. It's just more exciting.
Well, I'm really interested in that beef burger now, and I want to experiment with that. But let's turn to some of those veggie options you mentioned. I think I saw something made with a chickpeas in the cookbook.
Yeah. You can use all kinds of beans, chickpeas, pinto beans, cannellini beans. They all work really well. Typically, they're bound with some sort of a grain, maybe like some quinoa or just some breadcrumb. But they tend to be very delicate. These are burgers that are sort of, they have to be moist going on for the same reasons that the turkey burgers have to be moist going on, because if they're not, they're going to be dry in the end. So you make them kind of wet, and that makes them a little more delicate on the grill. It's harder to turn them.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of tips there. One is you actually want to refrigerate them for at least a half an hour or so before you grill them. That tends to firm them up a little bit. You still have all the moisture, but they're a little firmer and they hold together better. And if you really want to play it safe, put a griddle down on your grill, just like a cast iron griddle, or just use a cast iron skillet. And then it's going to be a lot easier to turn those vegetarian burgers or burgers made with beans, because, you know, they just don't hold together like beef does.
Jamie, what is your favorite non-beef burger in this book? Because you've got so much. You've got fish going on, I think some turkey and lots of veggie burgers. What is your go-to when you're not cooking with beef?
You know, one of my favorites is a fish burger. It's actually the smoked salmon burger with it's served with a fried egg on top, which I always love. And it's got a little scallion cream cheese thing. It almost looks like a brunch item, although I eat it for dinner all the time. And it's fresh salmon that's just pulsed in a food processor and then bound with a little bit of finely chopped smoked salmon, a little bit of egg, a little bit of breadcrumb to hold it together. And again, it's sort of my favorite stuff. It's the smokiness of the salmon. It's the char of the grill. And you got this decadent, you know, egg that you cook just ever so slightly, so the yolk just kind of spills into the burger, making almost kind of a hollandaise-type sauce. And then the cream cheese on the toasted, you know, muffin. It's just a really delicious item to do, kind of a surprise if you're throwing a barbecue. You know, I always tend to do some traditional beef burgers, but I like to throw in a few surprises as well.
Yeah, it sounds pretty fantastic.
Yeah, you got to come out here, Jamie. I can't visualize this. You got to come out here and
we
make one of these
for
us. Yeah, we're simple folk. You know, in Wisconsin, let's turn away from burgers. We love our brats here. Any tips, any advice on grilling the perfect brat?
Wow, I'm humbled that, you know, somebody from Wisconsin is asking me about brats.
Wait, I'll tell you, you're going to start 50 arguments at least with your answer,
no matter what it is. I know it. I defer to the experts here. I've been there and tasted some phenomenal brats in all kinds of environments, parking lots and nice restaurants. And, you know, I think just the sort of the slow cook over a low to medium heat until you get that char, it's kind of like the burgers again, where there's a contrast between the outside and the inside, and then, you know, plenty of just, you know, grilled onions or pickles or whatever you like. This is not complicated food. You know, it's popular because it's been so good for so long. I do have a couple of surprises in the book, or not surprises, I suppose, but just variations. You know, I do one brat recipe with a chow chow. I don't know if you know that, but it's a southern dish. It's basically a fresh pickled dish made with corn and tomato and some onions. And it's like a relish that just goes on top. So it's an alternative to, you know, sauerkraut or grilled onions, a little fresher, a little brighter, and really delicious. So, you know, I humbly recommend that somebody from Wisconsin try that just as a variation. But never lose the original. I mean, that's the gold standard.
Jamie, you've got us really hungry. We're just about out of time. What are you grilling next?
Well, actually, I'm about to do the Extreme Burger, which is the Weber Extreme Burger from Weber's Big Book of Burgers. Is a double-decker burger with bacon and guacamole and a special garlic mayonnaise and the lettuce and the tomato. It's just the over-the-top, you know, in-your-face, decadent, everything we love about a burger. So that is on my menu today.
I don't know if I'm quite that hungry. Jamie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Jamie Previance, the author of several cookbooks, including his latest called Weber's Big Book of Burgers. You can see Jamie's 5 Steps to Burger Brilliance on the Central Time Facebook page.
And while you're there, let us know. Have you gotten the grill out already? Or what are you planning to grill this weekend? Let us know on the Central Time Facebook page. By the way, coming up next week on Food Friday at this time, we'll talk about farm-to-table recipes featuring traditional and locally grown foods with the author of The Nourished Kitchen. Wisconsinites interested in running for public office this fall are circulating their nomination papers as of last week. They'll be doing that until June 2nd. Now, a lot of us might dream of having the power to change our communities and serving an elected office, but how many people really throw their hats into the ring?
Our next guest did just that, and against some pretty significant odds, too. Zach Ruwink is 26 years old, and he was recently reelected mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. He was first elected to the position when he was 24, making him one of the youngest mayors in the country.
Val Phillips also joins us. She is a Wisconsin-based attorney. She was the first woman and first African-American person elected to the Milwaukee Common Council. In 1978, she made history as the first woman and African-American elected as Secretary of State to a statewide office in Wisconsin, putting her in the highest office held by a woman in Wisconsin in the 20th century. Val Phillips, welcome to Central Time.
Hi.
And Zach Ruwink, welcome to you as well.
Oh.
Val, let's start with you. What
All right. What
led you to run for office? What made you want to serve in office?
Well, Wisconsin had not every 10 years. We have to reapportion and get new guidelines for different places in the state, and we do that every 10 years. For some reason, Wisconsin had not done it in 3 decades, that's 30 years. And all the Journal and the Sentinel, I'm on the phone. The Journal and the Sentinel were separate at that time, and both of them were advocating reapportionment. And so I had joined the League of Women Voters, and they were very much for reapportionment. And I went door to door for reapportionment. That was my first kind of taste of talking to people, asking it. Because if you voted no, they had it so that if you voted no, that meant you wanted reapportionment. If you voted yes, then you didn't want it. It was all fixed so that we would not have reapportionment. And to think that we had gone 3 decades, 30 years, it was very, that was my first, my first knocking on people's doors and telling them about the importance of reapportionment.
And then you ended up running for Common Council and probably knocking on people's doors again. There hadn't been a woman in the Common Council in Milwaukee. There hadn't been an African-American there. What was it like being the first person to try to break that?
Well, my husband had promised me that if they actually did reapportion, he would run because I didn't think of doing it. And then when they did reapportion, well, then he wanted to chicken out. You know, he didn't want to do it. So he said, well, you have the same credentials that I have. Why don't you do it? So I said, well, I don't know. I don't know if a woman could do it. So then I went to the library and found out that, what you have to do, and that there had never been a woman and never been an African-American. So that I still tried to get him to do it, but he wouldn't. And we didn't have much money, but the little money he had put aside for me, a Maine coat, when I said, gee, it would be hard, but we don't have really any money, he said, well, you know, I started a Maine coat fund. And I said, wow. I said, how much is in it? And he said, I think he said around $3,000 or $3,600. Now a Maine coat would cost $10,000 or $12,000, I think. But I said, he said, would you want to use that? I said, well, let me sleep on it. And we both slept on it. And the next day, he said, what do you think? I said, I'm willing to try. He said, well, I think that we shouldn't use the Maine coat because I promised you that. And I said, well, I think I'd want to do it. And that's what we used. The whole three, I don't remember whether it was $3,300 or $3,600, but whatever it was, we used it.
Wow. So the Mink Coat Fund was the seed money for running for office. I want to turn to Zach Vruink now, mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. Like Vel, in a way, you are an unexpected face in politics because of your age, 24 years old. As somebody in that age range, we might think of people as apathetic. What led you to say, hey, I want to run for office, Zach?
Well, in growing up in the community that I now represent, I often had taken interest in the decisions that were made in the community, really in the sense of what are we doing to ensure youth and young people have a seat at the table. And I can think back to middle school and high school and getting involved in political campaigns, one in my own family, really, and the campaign side of things really drew my interest, and went off to school at University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. And pursued a degree in political science. And at that point, I thought, gosh, maybe I could be a candidate for office. And soon after graduation, returned to Wisconsin Rapids. And at that point, it really became clear that our community needed a candidate that would represent its future and represent youth and new ideas. And so at that point, after the kind of encouragement of other people in the community, decided to pursue the office. You know, I really think back to, as I mentioned, the middle school, high school, when I saw decisions that were made by the mayor at the time and others, and there wasn't youth. There wasn't youthful perspectives. Our city council in recent years has elected some younger members, but other than that, historically, most of our mayors have been close to retirement or just coming out of retirement or last step before retirement, and so I wanted to offer our community something different, a different different option.
Zach, when you told people you're running for office, you said some people were encouraging. Did most people take that seriously, or did you think, hey, it's this young guy right out of college, we're not going to take that seriously at all?
Well, I think there might have been a bit of that, but I think as I went door to door, as Vel just talked about, people really reaffirmed the need for a young perspective, a new perspective in our community. And surprisingly, people really were called to not only campaign for myself, but to donate funds, and which was, you know, really surprising to me that people really felt very strongly that someone young could run the city. And, you know, part of it, too, is you have to prove and demonstrate your ability to do that. So I always said during the campaign it wasn't about any sort of age. It was about ability and an ability to do the job. And so that was, no question, a stumbling block and a piece to overcome.
And Vel Phillips, when you announced you were running for office, again, there were no women on the Common Council of Milwaukee, no African Americans had served. What did people say to you about your race and your gender when you ran?
I didn't announce anything. I just took out my papers, and I had a few people who believed in me because I had joined the League of Women Voters and the YWCA and different organizations because I was an organization person, and I was very interested in what was happening. And I truly thought my husband, because he promised, would run. I didn't think of myself as running. And when he refused, there was a reporter by the name of Doyle Getter. I asked him, he said, oh, well, at that time I just knew there had been a black person. And they didn't say black in those days, they said Negro. And so then he checked, he said, well, I don't think there's ever been a woman to survive the primary even. And you wouldn't enjoy that, a lot of old men that smoke cigars and stuff and wouldn't be. But the more he talked against it, and the more my husband talked for me doing it so I wouldn't be on him, the more interested I got. But I'm very impressed with someone, the young man who is the mayor at 26, are you now?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm very impressed because I'm sure that later on. Oh, and you've graduated from college already?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I had graduated from law school. But the thing is, you're getting such really wonderful experience in being not only just an elected official, but in municipal government, period, that you'll probably want to go to the Senate and do other things. It's just very impressive because I was older than you, but I was very young when I started in law school, and there were only about maybe 10 women and at least 200 or 300 students. And there were just so few women that we would meet in the John and chat and talk and stuff. And it's different, but it's very exciting. And I hope that you decide to stay in public office. And
we're talking to Val Phillips, longtime activist and politician. She was the first African-American, the first woman to hold, well, a lot of different offices here in the state. And Zach Frewink, mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. He first ran and was elected at age 24, 26 now. He's just been reelected. And we were talking about their experiences in running for office, and we'd like to hear from you, too. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Nominations for fall elections in Wisconsin are open as of last week, and our two guests are sharing their experiences running for office against some significant odds. Zach Frewink, mayor of Wisconsin Rapids, was 24 when he was elected, making him one of the youngest mayors in the country, and Val Phillips was the first woman and the first African-American selected Secretary of State in Wisconsin.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you have questions about their experiences or about what it's like to run for office? Have you ever run for office, and are you thinking about it and you need advice, encouragement, inspiration? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Val Phillips, I imagine a lot of people have asked you for advice over the years. If someone out there is thinking they might want to run for office, they're not sure if they should, do you have some encouragement for them?
Oh, indeed. They should just follow their dream. It's amazing. I was the first woman judge in the county, and the second, there was someone way up north that was the first woman in the state. And Pat Lucy tried to get me. Nobody knows her. I think she was about a month, 2 or 3 weeks before I. And so technically I was not the first woman in the state. I was the second woman by just a few weeks and the first woman in Milwaukee County. So I would just say, if this is, I attended woman judges from all over the country just a couple of weeks ago, and it just really blew my mind. I think there are at least 16 women now in Wisconsin who are judges. And when I became a judge, since there had never been a woman, the woman that was first by 2 or 3 weeks or so from me was way up north. And so I was treated like I was out of outer space or something. So I would say to women, everything is open. You know, you can be, I think we might have the first woman president coming up, and I know it's going to be hard for her, but I would say to the women, please do not feel that you have to have a husband or be married or whatever, just go for it, and it's challenging, and it's wonderful, really, so I hope that more women, but the fact that we now have about 13 or 16 women judges in the state of Wisconsin is quite something.
And Zach Fruink, a similar question for you. If somebody is maybe asked you, hey, it sounds like a lot of work. I think I want to run for office. What should they weigh? How should they make the decision if they want to run or not?
Undoubtedly, it's a lot of work and a lot of stress at times, but it definitely is worth it. I would say, regardless of success, choosing to run for office is tremendously rewarding, not only for personally experiencing what it is to run, but even to for the debate, for healthy dialogue in the community. I would add too that it's kind of an obligation of those that of not only my generation but other generations to ensure that there is a seat at the table for them, that having a government and a democratic government that's representative of its people is absolutely critical. And just because the odds chances are slim or the odds are against them, it shouldn't be a detractor. They really should think very strongly about pursuing it, and would highly encourage them to do so. And reach out to those that have served or are currently serving. We're great resources on many levels, and I would suggest that anyone that's interested can make myself available and anyone else, but to reach out to those that have it, because it's a tremendously rewarding thing, regardless of success.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly, and not be discouraged. Like, there's always something in the paper. What shall we call her? They finally did decide to call me Madam Alderman. And when I used the alderman's bathroom, because I was pregnant at the time, been trying, and it would happen that just before the primary, I found that I was 5 months pregnant. I was... April is when I was sworn in, and I only found out that I was pregnant about a month before that. So, whatever, just follow your dream, and it's as the gentleman just said, it's very rewarding. It's just wonderful. I didn't even think about money, and you're gonna have all kinds of challenges, but I think the day is coming when women will make the same as men when they're doing the same job, and they won't be afraid of a woman who wants to do what has traditionally been cut out just for a male. It's I wouldn't trade. The only thing I would do different is I would be more I keep better records when I would talk to Martin Luther King or JFK or LBJ. I would, I just took it for granted, and I didn't keep good notes or care about the future. So I would say keep good notes and later on write about it.
And I would add, too, really never to leave any position open for or take it for granted, regardless of the level of government, local elected, and whether it's city or county or statewide office, that anyone can start at any level and not to write it off, that their decisions that are made at the local level are just as important as those at the state or the national level.
That's very true. And I served in all three branches when I was on city council, that's the legislative branch. When I was a judge, that was the judicial branch. And when I was a secretary of state, that is the executive branch. So I just happened to, I didn't plan it, but I served in all three. And I met some wonderful people. Jimmy Carter, I introduced him when he came to Milwaukee. And that because at the time I was secretary of state, Dreyfus was the governor and the lieutenant governor. Our president always spoke to the highest-ranking Democrat in the executive branch, and that happened to be me because Dreyfus, and then the secretary said he was Republican, and the next third name on the ballot was Secretary of State, and that happened to be me. So. It was so challenging. I'm just very impressed, as I said before, with the young man who is 26 60 years old.
Well, I want to ask both of you before we're out of time. Val Phillips, let's start with you. Politician, sometimes it's a dirty word, and people think it's a dirty job. What is the value of public service in your mind?
Oh, it's not dirty at all. You are in a position, however, to do things that other people cannot do. So there's all kinds of things that may throw you off. If you know that what you want to do is to make a better city or state or United States and to right some of the wrongs, then you should hang in there and do it and not be swayed by the fact that it hasn't been done before.
And Zach Vruink, what do you think, the value of public service, even when people don't necessarily look highly on those public servants?
Absolutely, especially because politicians, I believe, do have some expiration dates, that after some point when they're in office, their ideas no longer are necessarily as representative of the society in which they are, of the people that elect them. So to have options and to have candidates that from various backgrounds seeking political office is critical. And regardless of what people might see of the institution as being gridlocked or having negative perceptions of it, but I think indefinitely having people run at all levels of government and regardless of their backgrounds is absolutely critical.
Well, Zach, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Val Phillips, thanks to you as well.
Happy to do it.
We've been speaking with Zach Vruink. He's mayor of Wisconsin Rapids, first ran and was elected at age 24, just reelected at age 26. And Val Phillips, she's a Milwaukee-based attorney. She was the first woman, an African-American, elected to the Milwaukee Common Council, Secretary of State in Wisconsin, and a lot of points in between. Nominations for fall elections in Wisconsin are open as of last week. They've been sharing their experience on what it's like to run for office.
Also, in case you missed it, for our Teach Me What You Know segment last Tuesday, we spoke with the Wisconsin Government Accountability Board about how to get on the ballot. Lots of good information there if you are considering a run for office, a starting point. Lots of inspiration here, too, talking with Val Phillips and Mr. Vruink. And that is available on the Central Time Facebook page.
And while you're there, tell us why you have or haven't run for office in your life. What would it take to get you to do it?